Saul David is Professor of War Studies at the University of Buckingham, and he spoke to me earlier about the forgotten battles at Lobain and Kambula, which played a key role in an eventual British victory. Would you mind giving a bit of background as to how the Zulu Wars began?
Zulu Wars are quite interesting. They're like a lot of the imperial conflicts I've studied of the 19th century. Your first impression is, well, it must be some sort of guiding policy that drives the empire, the expansion of empire forward. But actually, in many cases, of course, they start on the ground. In other words, it's the local officials, either military or civil in this case, who are actually setting the agenda. And this particular character is a man called Sir Bartle Frere. And he's been sent out to South Africa with the specific task of achieving a Confederation of Southern Africa, which it is assumed will be of benefit to the empire, not only for trade, but also for security. In other words, it will be able to run its own security and it will relieve the financial pressure from Britain. So that's his job. And when he gets there, he realizes that to meld together this complete hodgepodge of Boer republics, which aren't under our control, British crown colonies, which are, including Natal and the Cape Colony, and also, of course, a number of African states, including Zululand. And Zululand is seen as the most dangerous in the sense that it's got the biggest army, a very militarized state that is a tremendously powerful military power, and that to achieve confederation, particularly to bring the Boers into line, the Boers of the Transvaal province, he needs to neutralize Zululand. And so it's really a decision that has got nothing to do with the specific threat Zululand is posing to crown colonies at that time. It's got to do with strategy, and he sees that he needs to neutralize Zululand if he is to achieve confederation, and he's been offered a peerage, so there's a kind of personal element involved in all of this. And so he sets in train a sequence of events that inevitably leads to the outbreak of the Zulu War, chiefly among them being the imposition of an ultimatum to the Zulu king, which he knows the Zulu king cannot accept. Terms like the disbandment of the Zulu army, which is pretty much what keeps the Zulu king in power. And at the expiry of the ultimatum, the 30-day expiry, which happens to be the 11th of January 1879, that is officially when the Zulu War begins.
In the feature that you've written for the magazine, you focus on two battles in the Zulu Wars, Lobain and Kambula. What was the significance of these battles?
Well, I think that Lobain and Kambula very much are the forgotten battles of the Zulu War, and there's one good reason for this, and that is that the earlier battles, the battles right at the outset of the war that took place on the 22nd, 23rd of January at Isandlwana and Rorke's Drift, have pretty much obscured just about everything else that happens in the war. Now, there's a very good reason for this, and that is that Isandlwana was a terrible British defeat, and Rorke's Drift was apparently a great British victory. Now, when you actually look at those two battles side by side, you realise that, yes, Isandlwana was a bad defeat, but Rorke's Drift was relatively minor action. But it's blown out of all proportion, both in the minds of the public and also, to a certain extent, to historians, by the then British commander, Lord Chelmsford, who's responsible for the defeat of Isandlwana, and of course he's very delighted that, luckily for him, this side action has been fought, which enables him to obscure the effect, really, of the disaster, and also, he hopes, will prevent him from being recalled back to Britain. And so he hypes up hugely the importance of Rorke's Drift, saying that but for the defence of Rorke's Drift, Natal, the province of Natal, the crown colony of Natal, would have fallen to the Zulus, which is complete nonsense, because King Cetshwayo, the Zulu king, had always insisted that his commanders didn't actually invade Natal, and for them even to go as far as Rorke's Drift was beyond the orders they'd been given. But Chelmsford realised the importance of Finn, of PR, and it's another reason why so many VCs were given out for Rorke's Drift, 11 VCs, more than for any other single action in the history of the British Army, and that is because he wanted to make it seem like it was a big deal. That's not to say there weren't some extraordinarily heroic acts undertaken at Rorke's Drift, but 11 VCs for a total garrison of 140 men, or 1 in 10, a little bit over the top, in my opinion, and also in the opinion of people at the time, including the Duke of Cambridge, the Commander-in-Chief of the British Army. So these two battles have been built up hugely by Lord Chelmsford, in particular Rorke's Drift, and pretty much everything else that comes after that is obscured by the oxygen of publicity that Chelmsford has been given to these two battles. Now, the reason I feel that Lobain and Kambula in particular deserve some recognition is because they were really the battles on which the ultimate outcome of the Zulu War, rather than specific actions or even campaigns, they were the battles on which the outcome of the Zulu War really hinged. This was the great turning point of the war, and Kambula in particular, which was the great great British victory against the main Zulu army, which was undefeated at this point, really broke the spirit of the Zulu army. And we know this not only because it never fought as well again, but also because Zulus who fought in the final battle of Ulundi pretty much said that. They said that after Kambula, our spirit was gone. And so these two battles, which are extraordinary in their own right, not least because the commanders who were in charge of them, men called Evelyn Wood and Reivers Buller, who become great figures in the British Army and go on to, you know, the highest command ultimately, their roles in these battles have pretty much been forgotten because of, as I said, the earlier battles really pretty much obscuring what went on thereafter.
Would you say these two battles were therefore more important than the more famous two that came earlier?
I suppose the overall point to make is that during the course of a campaign, all battles are important in one shape or form. I mean, Islamwan is undoubtedly a very important battle because it's a huge defeat for the British Army, not only in the course of that campaign, but also in the context of 19th century British warfare. The only campaign you've got to compare to it was the retreat from Kabul, the disastrous retreat from Kabul in 1842. And those two are the kind of standout British defeats against technologically inferior foe that occurred during the 19th century. So it is important in that sense, but is it important in terms of the ultimate outcome of the Zulu War? Well, not as much as Kambula in particular, and Kambula and Lobain, the twin battles that take place a couple of months later, really are the key to understanding why the Zulus ultimately lost the Zulu War. So, in other words, it's important to understand the relevance of all the battles, but the problem with the Zulu War is that it's really become crystallized in the minds of the viewing public down to simply two battles, and those are Rorke's and Islamwana. And of course, Chelmsford was partly to blame, but the other key factor is the fact that two feature films were made in the 20th century, two very popular feature films, one in particular, and that, of course, is Zulu, which depicts the events of Rorke's Drift. Because of that, people very much have the image of the Zulu War being that one single action. And, of course, it will be remembered and still is remembered because it was the action at which most VCs were won.
So films like Zulu actually have been misinforming the public, perhaps, about the Zulu Wars?
I think we'd be slightly naive to imagine that feature films of historical moments, historical battles, are going to be accurate. There is certainly a lot of license taken with all feature films. The problem with the film Zulu in relation to the Zulu War is that it very much gives you the idea that the war was almost won and lost in that particular moment of Rorke's Drift. In truth, those events were at the outset of the war, and of course there was much fighting to be done thereafter. And if you'd simply watched Zulu, you might have got the feeling that actually that was where we got our revenge from Islamwana, not at all. Where we really get our revenge for Islamwana, where the British really get the revenge for Islamwana, is at the Battle of Kambula, where the spirit of the Zulu army is broken forever.
And who were the heroes of the Battle of Kambula?
Two heroes of the Battle of Kambula are the British commanders. I mean, there were many heroes, of course. There were many, many individual soldiers and junior officers. But the two guiding lights behind the battle, the men whose spirit really ensures a great British victory, are the commander himself, Brigadier Evelyn Wood, and his deputy, Colonel Reivers Buller. And these two men go on to climb to the very highest reaches of the British Army. Evelyn Wood goes on to become a field marshal and second in command of the British Army. And Buller goes on to command when the British eventually go back to South Africa 25 years later, and it commands at the outset of the Boer War. But never, unfortunately, with the same brio he showed during this earlier stage in his career, particularly the fighting during the Zulu War. And some people have suggested, and I think there may be some truth in this, that Buller was a fabulous colonel, a less effective brigadier, and a really second-rate general. And that sometimes happens when you give very brave and very capable soldiers too much responsibility.
Had they learned the lessons of previous defeats against the Zulus?
Well, I think in many ways Kambula and Lobain mirror the earlier twin battles of Islamwana and Rorke's Drift in the sense that Lobain's a defeat and Kambula's a victory. But where they certainly learnt the lesson of the disaster at Islamwana is that they realised that if you're going to take on a large Zulu army, the best thing to do is make sure you've got barricades to fight behind. Now, they had barricades at Rorke's Drift and they proved to be very effective. They had no barricades at Islamwana because the army under Lord Chelmsford was far too arrogant to think it required them. But that was certainly a lesson that Evelyn Wood had learned. And when the actual fighting takes place at Kambula on the 29th of March, 1879, it's behind incredibly strong defences. They not only have lagers there, they've also built entrenchments so that you've got this double defensive situation, which is pretty nigh impregnable. And that pretty much shows shows itself in the casualties that are actually incurred at Kambula. Only 18 Europeans are killed, and yet 2,000 Zulus are killed. Now, if you compare that to Isandlwana, where 1,300 Europeans and African auxiliaries on the British side are killed, you get a sense of the different tactics that the British are using, and the fact that they're able to reduce casualties as a result of that.
Now, you've recently written your first novel, Zulu Heart, which is set during the Zulu Wars. How did the experience of writing that differ from writing your straight history books?
Well, I think the great pleasure in writing a historical novel connected to a period of history that I knew an awful lot of detail about is that although historians can discover all kinds of fascinating documents that lead them to make certain conclusions about what went on in the past, they can never get inside people's heads unless they actually have a bit of evidence to do so. In other words, it's very difficult to say exactly what was going on in Lord Chelmsford's mind the day he led his troops out of Isandlwana and therefore partly caused the disaster that day. What you can do in fiction is pretty much put yourself in the head of a historical figure. So in many ways, it frees up the historian and enables him to follow his instinct. Why did the disasters happen at Isandlwana and later on in other battles in the Zulu Wars? Well, we don't know for sure. We've got a pretty good idea. But what you can do in fiction is make those assumptions and make them come true. And of course, there are many unexplained things that happen, not just in battles, but also in history in general. And fiction allows you to play around with that to a certain extent. I think the danger, of course, is to move too far off what we know actually happened. Particularly if you're dealing with real historical figures, you should never really go beyond the point of allowing them to say or do things that either we know they said or did, or that we know there's a pretty good chance they might have done, given their characters. So quite important not to take liberties with history, but a great freedom to allow you to play around with it nonetheless.
Do you think that your book will ignite interest in readers to find out more about the history of the wars?
I think one of the key aspects of historical fiction, much underestimated by people who say, well, of course, that's not what actually happened, it's just a story set in those events, is that in reality, it's a much more user-friendly form of acquiring historical information. Now, I would hate to think that anyone would just want to read historical fiction, and I know for a fact that a number of people who've read my history books also read historical fiction. You often come across people who say, oh, yes, well, I love flash fiction books, but I also love history. And I think they can be an interchange between the two. And if someone for the first time comes across a story like the Zulu Wars and is fascinated by it because they've read it in fiction, which is a slightly easier, slightly more reader-friendly way to be introduced to a historical period, I think there's a very good chance they might want to go on and learn a little bit more. And that's one of the reasons why at the end of my historical novel, Zulu Heart, I've got a list of further reading, and I'm amazed that you don't see this more often in works of historical fiction.
Saul David is Professor of War Studies at the University of Buckingham. His debut novel, Zulu Heart, will be published by Hodder on 5th of March.